Thank you for tuning in. I am your hostess, Lana. Joining me is Willem Petzer from South Africa. He's the chairman of the Taxpayers Union of South Africa, and I'd say an all-around Afrikaner activist letting the world know what is really happening in South Africa. So if you want to know, get the lowdown, you definitely need to follow Willem. Welcome, Willem. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much for hosting me, Lana. It's an honor.
So it's wintertime down there, right? So how are the winters in South Africa?
Well, it was quite cold a few weeks ago. It went below 0 Celsius a few days, which is quite annoying. But right now, it's not that cold. It's about 12 degrees. I don't even know what that is in Fahrenheit, probably like 50 Fahrenheit.
Ah, piece of cake.
Yeah.
Piece of cake. Well, this is going to be good. My first interview actually on South Africa was back in 2014. So this is nearly a decade ago. And it's only intensified. It's getting worse. Yeah, there we go. There's Ati Skuta. I don't know if you know him. I wonder where he is and what he's doing. But well, you and I first got in touch, I think it was like a couple years ago. And now we're, of course, finally doing this interview. But Malema was in the news again in the spotlight after a communist EFF leader, Malema, again was calling to kill the Boer, kill the farmer. This was in a stadium full of people, and lefties in the West were saying, hey, you're all just taking it out of context. It's a song they used to sing against white oppression. It's just a chant. Yeah, by a political leader openly calling for murder, but not a peep from human rights groups. In fact, they defended it. What was your reaction to all of that if you were watching that? I think you were on Twitter, or should I say X?
Well, it was nothing new, to be honest with you. I mean, he's been singing this song since he started getting into politics, and it's not a new song at all. I know a lot of journalists and left-wing people say that we are equating this to a genocide here, which I am not doing. A lot of people on the conspiracy right are very much afraid that there might be a genocide in South Africa led by Malema or something that he would instigate on some level. But from my side, I'm not afraid of a genocide so much, just because I don't believe the black people in South Africa, if they would want to go over to do something like that, which I'm sure many of them do, they don't have the logistical or the managerial skills to be able to organize something like a genocide. I always tell someone I would much rather be oppressed in air quotation marks by Malema or Nelson Mandela or Zuma or whoever than I would want to be oppressed by Joseph Stalin, for the mere fact that it's basically just an idiot running this country. And I can say that without worrying about anything happening to me, because I know they don't have the know-how to do anything about it, me sitting here saying that. So in that sense, I'm not worried about it. But in another sense, we do know that there's a lot of farm murders going on in this country, and they are mostly targeting old people. It's mostly not the rich farmers, it's poor farmers that they target. And it's old people, it's people that really can't fend for themselves. And then they come in a group of 6-7 people, they torture and they murder, really just people who are defenseless. It's not your normal murders in most senses, where people are just robbed for any reason. They are murdered. It's a complete hate crime. The same thing happened to my family, to my great uncle and great aunt, and also their son, who were killed. They were tortured and they were written in their blood on the walls. But they were just defenseless people sitting in their home. They were old. They were in their 80s already. So this is basically what we're looking at. It's these terror attacks or these hate crimes against really defenseless people on the one hand. But on the other hand, they are quite afraid to try and do this with young, strong Boer people. For instance, I can tell you a story in, I don't know if you saw, in Brackenfell. It's one of the towns in South Africa near Cape Town. The EFF had a protest there, and they started a fight with some of the parents of the school kids. And they immediately, when the parents started fighting back, the EFF guys were just running away. They were cowardly in that sense. So it's not like they will do anything unless it is against someone who is clearly not able to fight back or defend themselves.
I see. Yeah, exactly. And it's not the poor white farmers that ever oppressed you. Now, I'd argue they were never oppressed, but I mean, that's their argument, right? You stole the land. And that's what I was thinking too. Why don't you go after then in that case, those who own the diamond mines, try and go for that land or try and go for those people, but they never do, right? I mean,
they don't.
I mean, there's large corporations in South Africa. What about them? How come they never target them?
Well, they have a lot of rhetoric against large corporations in South Africa, but sometimes they would go to like a supermarket chain, like we have this pharmacy chain called Clicks here, and they would destroy these shops of this chain because of a hair product. There was this advertisement where it said, there were different types of shampoos for different types of hair. And then the one said something like, I think it said healthy hair, and then it had this blonde girl, a white girl on there as their model. And then it said something like dry and cracking hair, and then they had this black woman as their model on there. And then the EFF, because of this advertisement, they went to this this chain of stores that released this advertisement, and they started looting the stores, which basically is what they do every time they protest. If there's a chance to start looting shops, they will start looting shops. That will be their main focus, if that's even possible.
Same thing in America, right? You know, they get pissed off over some really retarded thing, and then they have to go steal and burn down all of Chicago, you know.
Exactly. They get so angry they have to steal a new iPhone.
And then they blame white supremacy and racism, these mythical things. Now, I wanted to ask you, now, farm murders have gone up since then, right? You had said it had gone up sevenfold since Malema's chant there.
Yes, it's quite interesting. The week after his chant, we had seven farm murders, and the statistics is about 50 per year. So that's basically one per week. And then we had seven in 1 week. And now this last week, we again only had one. So just for that 1 week after he chanted it, the farm murders went up sevenfold, but now it's down to normal again. So obviously, it's impossible to prove it beyond reasonable doubt, but it looks like there was quite a significant correlation between the chant happening and these attacks going up sevenfold in 1 week and then stabilizing again.
Now, do you have a number about how many farmers are operating in South Africa?
Well, the last number we had was in 2011, and then it was 30,000. But I think it has gone down since then. A more realistic number today would be probably about 20,000.
Okay.
So it's not a lot.
But then, and then journalists are like, see, it's not that big of a deal, right? It was just a couple white people died the other day. What's the big deal? How do you respond to that?
Well, it's significantly, they are significantly targeted because of the fact that they live on farms, and there's this whole land rhetoric, I think, in the first place. Secondly, it's easy, they are easy targets because they are so isolated. So if you want to go kill someone just because you want to kill someone and for no other reason, then someone who's isolated like that is probably your best target. And then, in the third place, they basically just try to get people off of the land because they think if they can get the land, which is their rhetoric, they'll somehow be rich from that. But we know it's not the truth. I mean, most farmers are not very rich. But if you look at the proportionality of this, 50 farm murders per year, and there are 20,000 farmers, which is my estimate, then you get to a number of 250 per 100,000 per year, which is very, very high. It's higher than I think the mortality rate for soldiers were in the Iraq war. You can check that if you want. I'm not 100% sure of the numbers, but I think it's higher than that.
And it's the fact that they're being targeted because they're white. If this was happening anywhere else in the world, if whites were targeting, let's say, blacks, farmers, just because they're black, you know, and we wanted the land, it would be world news. They'd be, NATO would be coming in there. There'd be tanks from America coming in there. So it's always, it's the hypocrisy, the double standard, and it is a lot. I saw this video. There was a cross for every white farmer killed in South Africa. Yes. It was, between 2018, 2022. It was a lot. It's a lot of bodies.
Yes,
and, we're talking like horrible executions and torture and killing babies and killing parents in front of little children and just like really horrific, heartbreaking crimes. I just couldn't imagine.
Yes, I would argue that the method of the killings are even worse than the numbers are. They've started in the 1980s, and since then there has been about 2,000 farm murders in South Africa, but we're talking about 40 years now, obviously, and it hasn't stopped. It was a terror technique that was begun by the ANC before they came into power, and they started doing it in the 1980s, and they haven't stopped since. It's being deployed up until today.
Now, how do some of the white lefties respond to some of this? Because it is amazing seeing some, South Africans just kind of turn on their own, like, it's not a big deal. it's like white liberals in America. They're so self-hating. It's just hard for me to get in that mindset, you know.
To be honest with you, we don't really have white liberals in South Africa.
Oh, really?
Not really. If you go into a normal conversation, then 90% of the people would be basically considered right wing in America.
I like it. Good.
It's just because of the circumstances that they are in. But if you're talking about white lefties in the news and so on and so forth, then it will most definitely not be Afrikaners. Very few of them are Afrikaners. It's mostly English people living in Cape Town in 100% white areas where there are no black people even coming close to there, or basically Anglos, and then obviously there's a lot of Jewish people, like the guy that said that he wants to pair his wine with white genocide.
Richard Poplack. I have that Poplack tweet. Yes. Journalist in South Africa.
So these people are not affected by farm murders in any way. They live in cities. They don't have family that own farms, because most farm owners in South Africa would be Afrikaners, would be Afrikaans-speaking Germanic peoples, and then the Anglos would mostly be in the cities. So if you talk about my people specifically, then someone being a stereotypical American lefty would be very, very rare to come across.
Yeah, I've always had great conversations with Afrikaners, so that's good. Gets you red-pilled like being in the thick of it. Yes. So what do you think about Elon Musk getting in the conversation finally about kill the Boer chant and South Africa in general? We see that it was trending on Twitter. He's of South African heritage. What do you think about that?
Well, I would have to see if anything happens from it. I don't have a lot of hope. A lot of people get their hopes up when someone, like, for instance, I think in 2016 or 2017, Donald Trump started tweeting about farm murders, and then everyone was celebrating, and they thought that something was going to happen, or that Donald Trump was going to do something about it. And then obviously nothing was done about it. So I honestly don't like it when people get their hopes up so much from something like that, because it shifts the focus from them doing something that might actually help, like joining farm watches or militias or getting training and stuff like that. And somehow they develop this sort of savior mentality that someone's going to come and save us, which is not going to happen. I don't think Elon Musk really puts a lot of emphasis on his South African heritage.
It's too bad.
He went to Canada, I believe, before he even left school, high school. So he was very young when he left South Africa, and I don't think he's even been here since. So in that sense, I don't think he sees himself as an or as some sort of ethnic loyalty to South Africans in any sense. But it's good that he's talking about it, to be honest with you. I think it's good that that someone, because if he talks, then everyone responds from the media, even if it's to just say that he's lying or that he's making up stories or whatever. It puts a lot of attention to it, but I don't think we need more attention to farm murders within South Africa in any case, because I think everyone who needs to be aware of it is already aware of it. Do you think that anything will come from international attention to this?
Yeah, I think it's good, because then maybe their pressure could be put on, you know, with human rights orgs, but those are all owned by lefties. We need our own human rights orgs, but just having attention put to it, I think, is very important, right? To know that eyes are watching, so that there's some accountability. I mean, what do you think is going to end it? What is the answer?
Well, probably in this day and age, nothing is going to end it. We need a complete paradigm shift within Western society, yes, to happen, and that's the only way something will change. I think, to be honest with you, the whole light shining on farm murders in South Africa and the anti-white hatred, yeah, is better for your propagandistic purposes than it is for mine, because you can actually use it
as an example, right? A warning. Yes.
Of what the path is that you're going down on. Because if I look at America today, it looks to me very much like South Africa in the 60s and the 70s.
See, yes.
The exact same sort of unrest that we had in those areas, in those years, we are seeing in America today. So when are they going to start some sort of terrorist attacks on whites in America? It's the exact same tendency that we saw in South Africa. And if you look at something like apartheid, for example, they say that it was this very oppressive system that was so detrimental to the human rights of black people in South Africa, but they are saying the exact same thing about America today. So
exactly.
Do you think America is oppressive to black people today?
No.
You probably say no.
No. And I did.
I would say
no, absolutely not. And now I've looked into this, and I, of course, I was in South Africa the last year during apartheid. Learned a few things. Was corrected on a few things. You know, history. We're never taught the true story, especially in Western institutions these days that are all hijacked by Marxists, right? Let's talk about some of the biggest apartheid lies. Like, for instance, that we hear that white people were slaughtering and mass murdering blacks.
I don't know who says that, but
they do. Yes.
Nothing of that sort happened. They were about in the heights of the anti-apartheid movement, where the terror and the we can call it the war in the township was at its highest. About 6,000 black people were killed during this, let's call it an urban war. About 6,000 black people were killed by white police officers in those days. But about 30,000 black people were also killed by other black people while the factions were fighting for control. So obviously in those days there were a lot of killings, but before that, I mean, South Africa was probably one of the safest countries in the Southern Hemisphere. It was right on par with Australia when we are talking about actual killings happening.
Yeah, that's amazing. Now, I want to get into several other things here, but just a little backstory. See, people think that there was already this large population of people when Europeans arrived into what is now known as South Africa. But of course, that's not true. There was nothing, right? There was nothing there until Europeans built a civilization. And then you saw an influx of Africans from all over the place coming down into South Africa, right?
Of course, they were people here. They were called Bushmen. They are not black in the sense of in the racial sense. They are a completely different race. They are the Aboriginal South Africans, but they are very, very scarce in today's day and age. There's probably not more than 1,000 of them left. But they were not killed by the white settlers coming in. They were mostly killed by the black tribes coming in.
Yeah.
It's not after white people started building a civilization here that black people started coming into South Africa. They were basically at about the same time that the Dutch settlers got to Cape Town, they were also starting to settle in South Africa. But obviously their numbers were extremely low. There were less than 1 million of them just 100 years ago. Just less than 1 million black people just 100 years ago, if you look at the census in South Africa. At the Union of South Africa in 1912, they recorded at the census about 1 million black people. Now there's about 50 million black people in South Africa today. So it increased 50-fold over a period of about 100 years. And some of that's just from people having lots and lots of kids, but most of it's from immigration from all over Africa.
Yeah.
Because when South African civilization was built, it's a very young civilization, actually. I would say only from the 30s and the 40s onwards, people actually started building a modern Western country here in South Africa. So the actual civilization, if you want to call it that, in South Africa, which is not just a settlement, I would say is less than 100 years old. But since then, black people have moved en masse to the cities that were built by Afrikaners and to South Africa in general.
Yeah, and what they built was beautiful. I was just recalling, I was just trying to pull it up. I was in Sun City, the water park. Have you ever been there?
Which water park?
It's called Sun City. It's in South Africa.
Oh, Sun City.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yes. Sun City was basically called, it was just a casino that was built there. It was built by a Jewish guy. That's actually a very interesting story. Gambling, it was illegal in South Africa under the very conservative National Party. So Sun City was not actually built in South Africa. It was built just on the other side of the border of South Africa, where there was like a, what's a tasteland in English, like a homeland. They had these homelands for black people, which was self-governed by these black tribes. So Sun City, the casino, was built just on the other side of the border, so white people from South Africa can cross the border into the black homeland and go gambling, and then they can leave again after they're done gambling. Yeah, so that's how Sun City came about.
Okay, I remember going down the water slides. It had kind of like a Egyptian theme, if I remember correctly. Oh, I'll have to look again. Now, speaking of earlier, we were talking about essentially segregation, right? 90% of South Africa already appears to be segregated. Now, is this something that even the black population, the majority of the white population, like they're okay with, you know, voluntary segregation? Or what are their thoughts on apartheid today? I mean, would it ever go back to that? I mean, what's the general consensus? Malema's people.
I think anyone who's white who would say that they are against voluntary segregation is lying. I think even those far left journalists are just too happy to live in areas that are 100% white, and they would never go live in a black area. But I don't think black people are very happy about it, because the black areas or the squatter camps are, on the one hand, it's just a terrible place to live. It's ugly, it stinks, there's trash everywhere, there's not proper infrastructure. And on the other hand, the crime within these townships are just terrible. The people in the townships are killing each other at a very high rate, and they are raping each other, and it's almost impossible just to live a normal life within those areas. So of course then people who live in these squatter camps wants to live in the white areas. They look at the white areas and they feel envious of the white people living there. But if I were to ever have a conversation with them and give them any sort of advice, I would tell them, why don't you just fix your own areas? Why do you need to come to the white areas if you can just stand together and fix Soweto or whatever area and get rid of the criminal element and start just having a pride in the area that you live in, clean it up, don't let the trash lie in the streets or the sewage or whatever, and just fix it. That's what we did in our area. So why do you need to come to our areas if you can just do what we did and fix yours?
Yeah, it's the same story everywhere, you know. When you get large populations of Africans anywhere in the West, it always ends up like that. And they have a hard time organizing, getting their stuff together, building something that's functioning. And then we just get blamed for it, right? And then they have to create these insane policies and these theories like critical race theory and all these other mythical lies to try and explain the differences instead of just saying we're different and that's okay. I mean, when I was in Africa, I remember being the first white person that some people saw, like going deep into the bush, and they did better living in the bush, like in their African ways. They did, right? It's like coming into the city and then you have Soweto and the ghettos, and then it just like it's bad, you know.
It's bad. Yeah, it looks really bad. Yeah, it's quite interesting now that you talk about critical race theory. When I went to law school, we had to basically do a subject called social dimensions of justice, which was basically just critical race theory. Yes. And how black people are basically owed everything. And then we had another subject called philosophy. And then when I saw philosophy, I thought, oh, we're going to do like probably like the apology of Socrates or something like that, which would be something that's relevant to a law degree. But then all we did was what they called African philosophy. And I quickly realized that there were no such a thing as African philosophy. No. African philosophy is just Marxism that was painted black.
Yes.
It's just like normal Marxist theory. And then they sort of give it like a little bit of an African tint. But then you get people like the EFF, which they are probably the most learned party in parliament. Except for the Freedom Front Plus, the EFF is the party with the most college degrees and especially PhDs of any of the parties in the South African government. But then if you look at what they teach those individuals, it's just these African philosophies. Yes. that I discuss right now. It's just basic Marxism, but they tell them that all of these ideas were black ideas or African ideas or that it was invented by black people, but no, it wasn't. It was invented by the Frankfurt School, and now you just make it.
Yes, like exactly.
Some African guy that came up with these ideas.
Yes. Now, do you think it would be somewhat better if Marxism didn't poison their minds and all this crazy anti-white philosophy, if it wasn't put in their heads? Because I don't think they would have thought of those things on their own. I mean, there's always going to be racial differences. You see that all throughout the world in different cultures and societies and civilizations. We're just different. It's fine to say that. But do you think that it would be a little better in South Africa without all the communist, Marxist, anti-white education or indoctrination, I should say?
Probably not. I mean, there would always be conflict between different ethnicities living in the same confined space. They would just find some other reason to be antagonistic towards the other ethnicities. So that's just something that's inevitable. If you have a multicultural society, it doesn't matter what you teach the people. There will always be animosity between groups.
It's going to arise. Now, I wanted to pull out an interesting tweet by Malema. This was back in 2010, where he was talking about Jewish supporters. So anti-Semitism is hatred, prejudice, or hostility towards Jews. Some of our biggest financial donors are Jewish, and we love them. And people are saying, well, what do you mean? Why are they such big supporters? Why would Jewish donors support your quest to kill the Boer and slaughter the white people? What did you make of this when you saw this? Because I know there has been a lot of, you know, Jewish Marxist influence in South Africa and, you know, during the fall of apartheid.
Well, Firstly, it's impossible to know who the EFF's donors are. In South Africa, it's actually illegal to donate to a party a substantial amount of money without declaring the donation. But then the EFF just said to all of their donors they shouldn't donate more than 100,000 rands, which is like $5,000 in one go, so they don't need to declare it. The party doesn't need to declare it, so nobody knows who actually donates to the EFF. But a lot of criminals are actually openly supporting the EFF, like all these different, it's not just, you know, Jewish mobs, but even like Lebanese mobs and Bulgarian mobs and basically all the different mobsters in Johannesburg, which is basically a gangster's paradise. Jeez. I mean, we've got mafias from probably any country in the world in Johannesburg, because it's such a good incubator for these gangs. But anyway, so a lot of these gangs are actually supporting the EFF. But to be honest with you, I don't know who Malema is referring to. I can't name any individuals that Malema is referring to in that tweet. I don't know a specific Jewish billionaire or anyone that actually donates to them or openly supports them. Whereas the ANC, on the other hand, I mean, they had a lot of them. The entire history of the ANC is
Joe Slovo, right? He comes to mind.
I mean, if you look at the Rivonia trials, there were more Jews that were prosecuted than there were black people.
Hmm.
Do you know what the Rivonia trials were?
No, I don't. Tell us.
It was very early into when the ANC started with their terror campaigns. They basically arrested the entire leadership structure of the ANC, and they prosecuted all of them. I mean, Mandela was one of the people who were prosecuted during those trials, and that's why he and a lot of other people were jailed for so many years. But if you, I don't know if you can pull up the trials, you can look at the names there, and then you can see who the leadership of the ANC was in those days. Yeah, there you can see it now.
Oh, wow. Okay, so the trial, 1963. You look at that. Now, what is their interest? Why? Why meddle in South Africa? Is it about the resources? Is communism the best way for them to get their foot in there and cause upheaval, and then they could go get diamonds? Like, what is the problem here? Why?
Yeah, I honestly don't know how to answer the question. I don't know if you even know how to answer the question. Your guess is as good as mine. Why they do these things? There are a lot of theories as to why, but none of them give conclusive evidence as to why they do it.
Just a destruction of the Afrikaner, the Goy, you know, the non-Jews that are there. I mean, is there a large Jewish population that's there today? I mean, it sounds like there is, but
no, not at all. It's actually quite interesting. In every small town in South Africa, there used to be like a synagogue, and right next to the synagogue, you had your Freemasons lodge.
Yes, yes.
And now, if you go to any small town, like the Freemasons lodge is probably bought out by someone else and turned into something else, and the synagogue is just basically falling apart. Like Jewish people, as a group, mostly left South Africa in the last 20 years.
Mm, yeah, but they still control the diamond business, right? And so they're getting most of those diamonds from Africa, correct?
Well, there's this company called De Beers, which is the biggest diamond company in the world. It's owned by a guy called Nicky Oppenheimer, and his father was Harry Oppenheimer, and they were mining diamonds in South Africa since diamonds were basically discovered here. But in 2003, the diamond prices just took a massive dip, and it hasn't increased at all since. So diamonds are not very good business anymore at all. So most of the old De Beers diamond mines in South Africa are just not operational anymore. But De Beers is still mining a lot of diamonds in places like Canada and Russia and those areas, but they don't really mine in South Africa anymore, mostly because of the political climate. Because of the political climate makes it not profitable to even operate those mines anymore, because once you start mining here, you need to deal with all the unions and the strikes and people attacking the mine, and people who feel entitled to the profits of the mine, or the fictional profits of the mine. They don't even know what profits they make, but they feel that these profits need to be shared with basically the black people, because the land should belong to the black people. And I can repeat all of the rhetoric, but I think you get the drift of
yes.
it. So because of this political instability, almost all of the Beers's mines in South Africa are just not operational anymore.
Well, that's a good thing. I like to hear that. Now, I did want to ask the ANC, the EFF, you know, they have this opposition to apartheid, but then they also want separatism. It's they want something unlike anything white people ever did, right? They actually truly want to oppress white people. To me, looking on the outside, it seems like they want to have them around so that they serve them and help things function while they still hate them and treat them like a second-class citizen. I mean, 3 decades, right, and of ANC rule has destroyed South Africa. I'm surprised it took that long. Obviously, they must have had some help to uphold it. But what do they really want? Like, what is going to make them happy? I mean, do they really want to advocate for the G word here, genocide? Or not really, because they know they wouldn't be able to, you know, get some of the things that they have right now.
I honestly don't know what they think they will be able to achieve with their rhetoric and with whatever they are telling their supporters that they want to do. Because I mean, if they kill all the white people in South Africa and they take all the resources and all the money and all the land and everything from the white people that live here, most of the black people, basically all of the black people, will still be poor. I mean, there are 10 black people for every white person in South Africa, and not all white people in South Africa are rich. So if you take all of this money that white people have and you distribute
still
it evenly
enough.
Among
yeah.
people, everyone will still be poor. So, yeah.
Because I do every now and then I see a video that comes out where there's a black person in South Africa is like, no, we need white people around, you know, like be nice to them because, you know, blacks can't build anything. They'll destroy everything. I mean, how many blacks think like that?
They want the tax money.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't want the people to leave because their taxes leave with them.
Yeah. Exactly, and the medical help and all that. And they already, South Africa doesn't get the aid, but it's amazing how much aid Europeans, even little countries like Sweden, give to Africa. It's outrageous.
It is. Especially like more African countries than South Africa, if you go higher up into Africa.
Yes, oh yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, we were showing some footage of Nelson Mandela. He's like your MLK, or I could even say George Floyd now, St. George Floyd. Now, Nelson Mandela, you know, everyone up here thinks he's just this peaceful guy, and he was fighting racism and white supremacy and oppression of blacks and mass murder of blacks. Now, what can you say about him, the cold, hard truth about who this guy really was?
Well, a really funny thing about Nelson Mandela is that he's not liked by your EFF types or even by most black people in South Africa. Mm. Most of them see him as a traitor. They see him as a traitor to their race because he didn't do what he said he was going to do. Obviously, you had this very radical rhetoric that the ANC had, that they were going to basically destroy the entire Afrikaner empire, and they are going to give everything to black people and whatever, and then he didn't do it, so most black people then saw him as a traitor because of that. But he was basically just he wasn't even one of the higher ups in the ANC, which is quite interesting. He was not, and he was also not the most popular amongst the black populace in South Africa before 1994. But he was basically just a figure that the Western countries, especially America, wanted to be president of South Africa. So they installed him as the president. I would say the end of apartheid was brought in South Africa 95% by America. It wasn't because of the ANC or anything like that. It wasn't because of the terror attacks that the ANC had conducted in South Africa. I mean, if it was still handled by the government, the reason why the ANC took over South Africa is almost exclusively because of America.
Great, huh? Such a great country. We just meddle and make things better, don't we? Well, it's not us. It's a small faction within our government that's doing all these things. But like you said earlier, South Africa is often used in our circles as an example of what not to do, things that people are attempting to do in the West, certain policies. Now, we don't just have, you know, Africans here like you guys have, but we have a variety of all kinds of people now from all over the world. And essentially, the idea is white people bad, every other non-European group is good. So implement programs to hold back white people because they stole everything. Now, you have a detailed thread and you get into a lot, but maybe you can kind of tell how critical race theory in action looks like when it's put into government policy. What are some things in South Africa, a couple examples that you can give, what CRT looks like in action? They're attempting to do those things. They are doing these things in America, but like, how deep does it go there?
Well, the first and most important thing that happens is you get rid completely of any form of meritocracy. And nobody in any position is there because of any form of merit anymore. And it's not like it's helping anyone. Like, for example, you have black economic empowerment in South Africa, which makes it almost impossible for a white-owned company to operate without having a black partner, and they can't get state contracts if you're not a black-owned company, and so on and so forth. But it basically just ends up creating nepotism. It's not helping black people. It's just helping the ANC and their friends and their family to become very rich. A very tiny, small group of black people get very, very rich off of it. But there's no merit to anything. So, for example, if they tender for a contract to build a road, they won't look at who actually has the skill or the knowledge or even the capacity to build that road. They would just give it to the person that they like the most or to their family or whatever. And what happens, the road does not get built. Or the person that got the contract just pockets the money and never does any work for the money, but then is never prosecuted for it. And so you just get the basic downfall of society. Everything that was here, that was working, that was functional, slowly gets deteriorated until it's at a point where it just doesn't operate anymore. It doesn't even exist anymore. And I think in any country where the same political ideas are actually put into policy, the same thing will happen. You will get rid of any form of merit-based system, and you'll get a bunch of idiots, incompetent people in charge who destroy and who steal and basically loot the entire country and the entire system with it.
Now, I'm curious how it's going to play out with South Africa as an example, because like you said, what you see happening in America right now is like South Africa, what, 60s or 70s? So how is this going to play out? How is it going to resolve itself? You know, demographics are a little different there. You're much more outnumbered in America. Well, it's still 50-50. You know, European Americans are still the majority, right? Even in Europe, we're still the majority, of course. But we're not doing much to fight back. Yeah, we're not doing much to fight back against that. Mass immigration is happening. And then these white people bad philosophies are, you know, being put into their heads. So they want blood, you know, they want to implement these kinds of CRT policies into government. They already are. So how does this play out? I want to see what happens in South Africa, what we can learn from it. We can pretty much predict. How does it end and how do we fix it? I mean, do Afrikaners...
What do I predict will happen in the future?
Yeah. I mean, you're closer to that brink, you know? So...
You mean when we hit rock bottom and there's nowhere yeah. lower to go and we start actually going upwards, what will happen at that point?
Yeah. I mean, do you think it's ever going to be that, you know, white people in South Africa are like, okay, this doesn't work. We have to just do our own thing. I know there's Irania. There's people that are talking about doing that. I mean, what are your thoughts on how this plays out?
I think it goes back to small communities standing together and protecting each other, and to have a very high trust, very close knit small community that self-governs, basically. I think if a state like South Africa completely fails, and we're very close to a failed state, but if it completely fails, the only way that things are going to go forward is you'll have sort of little islands of Afrikaner communities within a sea of black people, and then these small islands of Afrikaner people will have to protect each other and protect themselves and look after themselves. But I don't think there'll be a large bureaucratic statist government anymore, or there might be one, but it won't have the power to actually control the populace. So you'll probably see, let's say, a more primitive form of governance, and that's the only way that it'll go back to.
Yeah. Now, how do you respond to people saying, well, just get out of there? You know, it's bad. The violence is bad. It's escalating. It's on the brink of, you know, potential genocide. Just leave. Now, I know a lot of Afrikaners that are attached to the land, and they feel like, well, where can I go? It's also bad in a lot of, like, the Netherlands. Oh, my God, it's also bad there. But, like, I know a couple Afrikaners who have tried to apply to get back in the Netherlands. They're more Dutch than a lot of the people that are in there today that have come in through mass immigration. They're denied because technically South Africa is still a safe country, right? So they can't get refugee status. They can't afford to leave. It's harder. Some go to Australia and New Zealand, but some people, they just don't have that option. So what do you say to people that are looking from our side of things? I hear Americans say that all the time. Just get out. Just leave. You're surrounded, right?
Well, there are hundreds of thousands of people who already left, and I obviously don't blame them. If they want to leave, they may leave. For me, I've been to quite a few different countries overseas, and I don't particularly like it there. I think in the first place, staying amongst your own people is probably the best thing that you can do, because it's just you'll never feel at home unless you are with your own people.
That's right. It's the people. But, it's the people.
Yeah, it's the people, basically. And then on the other hand, I mean, I think it'll be quite boring to move to America for someone like me. There's so much.
It won't be that much different, honestly, Willem. It won't be, especially if you go to like Chicago or something. Maybe South Africa is even better. At least you can be segregated there.
South Africa is a country where I would say a young man can still have sort of a hero's journey. If you catch my drift, what I'm saying,
yeah.
Not just a 9-to-5 sort of job that you do, and then yes, you don't have enough money to pay your rent type of thing. Everything's very cheap here.
Still,
most people live very, very comfortably here if you're just sort of competent. But it's a land of adventure for me still. I mean, there's a lot to achieve here and a lot to do here, and a lot of factors that you can employ in your journey to leave your mark on this earth, which would probably not be possible in a country like America. In America, the only thing that you can do is make money, basically.
Well, we have a different kind of hero's journey here going on now. Fighting the big oppressive system, you know. There's still a lot of good white folks here, so I'm looking forward to seeing them more and more wake up and like organize and start thinking about their future and their interests and what kind of world their kids are going to live in, right? So even you as a white guy in South Africa feel like you can have a future. Like there's things that you can still do. You're not like totally iced out and totally threatened and feel unsafe.
Yes, no, definitely. No, I am having a good life here, and I'm happy here. So I've actually had the opportunity to go work in the Netherlands, and I was offered a job there, and I was even offered a job in Canada as well, but I turned both of them down. So I like it here.
You like the warmth too, I'm sure. Let's face it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the warmth is
Yeah,
also
I mean,
quite
when I was in Cape Town, it felt like somewhere in Southern California. It was like surfers and skateboarders, and I was like, this is nice here. It's pretty, and it wasn't crowded, and we saw animals. It was pretty cool. Now, I want to ask you about Orania. There was a tweet here. South Africa's on the brink of full-out race war. I strongly encourage every Afrikaner to go to Orania now. We are too few and too widely distributed to make a proper defense. They want to kill us all. They have made that perfectly clear. We do not have an army. Move now. Now, Orania is basically they're trying to become a fully independent Afrikaner country. Some say, but look at what happened with Rhodesia. You're surrounded, demographics, it doesn't matter. I don't know. What are your thoughts on Orania and what they're building and doing?
Well, of course, I support what they are doing. I'm probably not going to live there myself. I mean, as I told you, it's literally in the middle of the desert. It's not a very nice area or environment,
Looks
or
hard environment, yes.
it's a hard environment. It's just and it's warm and it doesn't rain and you can't have a garden there, nothing like that. All of the things that I like doing would be impossible in Orania. So it's definitely the lowest quality land that you can possibly go to in South Africa. I would rather just stay here in up where the high quality land is and basically fight for what is mine.
But they did it, I think, because then it's not as attractive to all these other people they don't want
Yeah,
there.
maybe, I don't know.
Now, what do you know about the founding of the legal process? Like, they had to, how did they go about that? Like, okay, this land we've bought, now we're our own, we want to be recognized as our own country. I mean, this is a good model to follow because I think this is something that might happen in European places in the future. We might have to have enclaves like this, right? Claim land just to preserve ourselves, right? And protect ourselves, like you were saying earlier, smaller communities. What do you know about the legal process of doing such a thing?
Well, they are definitely not sovereign. They are still
Okay.
part of South Africa. People living there still pay taxes to the South African government.
Ah, dang.
If they were actually sovereign, and if you moved there and if you became a citizen, you didn't have to pay taxes to the South African government, I would have definitely moved there. But that's unfortunately not the case. I think they market themselves as more than they actually are. They are not a Volkstaat or a people state. They're basically just a whites only town. That's all that it is. And I don't want to be insulting to them in any way, but be realistic. It's just a small town in the middle of the desert where only white people are allowed to live. But in every other sense, they are still part of South Africa.
Okay. I know that there's some folks in America that are like, sounds like paradise to me. Let me go.
Yeah, well, it's
Now,
very nice there. You
they'll
should visit
take
there
the desert
sometime.
just to be around a bunch of like good, normal white people, you know?
It's very nice there. You should visit it sometime. You'll enjoy it quite a lot, I
Yeah.
think.
Yeah. Anything else you want to tell us about the situation in South Africa? Anything you think like the record needs to be corrected or anything that you want to impart to people listening?
Well, I think the entire world is put on the exact same trajectory where we need to realize that people are being subverted into this universalist liberal idea where you can't have a sense of community and you can't have a sense of nationalism, or you need to be an island as an individual. The only thing that matters is the individual. But once we start realizing as a whole throughout the world that probably the greatest gift to mankind is on this earth to live and be part of a community, I think the entire zeitgeist will change in a manner where every country will be able to have more freedom and more chances of self-governing. And in South Africa, I think it's quite achievable for us to do that. If we don't have America, who will basically bomb us if we try that.
Yeah.
But the moment that I think the West will leave us alone to do our own thing, I think naturally we'll have this sort of self-governing, self-segregation in South Africa. And we are not afraid of the EFF or the ANC or Malema or any of those people. There's no way that if they start a war in this country or they try to commit a genocide or whatever, that they'll ever be
actually successful
with it. So I'm not worried about that at all. So I think the only reason why we are in the situation that we are in right now is because America supports the ANC, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Typical, you know, always supporting the communists. That's what they do, right? So frustrating. Yeah. Well, it'll be good to keep an eye on South Africa and see how things develop, and also see you guys as like trendsetters, so that other folks, you know, other Europeans across the globe say, well, they did it. We can do it too, right? And it always takes the trendsetter, the spear pushing through. So that is a hero's journey, because otherwise times can get dark and rough and ugly, like I see happening in America, like what has happened through the decades of mass immigration and basically importing the garbage of the world. Even other countries admit that. Like, thank you, America, for taking all our trash. Thank you, Sweden. You know, thank you, EU. You took all our trash. We're doing better now. You know, so we can't let that happen. And I think eventually there is a breaking point. And in that breaking point, we can start to organize and do some interesting thing. Exactly. It is a hero's journey. And I guess this is a journey that we all have to go on to go through the fire and refine ourselves as a people and individually. And this is where we're at. Now, everyone could follow you, Willem, on Twitter, Telegram, YouTube. Telegram is great, isn't it? We're on Telegram too. It's we're all the cool kids.
I'm not very active on there, no.
Nah, you got to jump on there more. It's good. I like it.
No, I'm more. I think my biggest platform is probably Facebook, because that's just the platform that most
Boomer book, yes.
Corner people on.
Yeah, we got banned on that. I think it was like one of the first ones we got banned on. And YouTube. I'm surprised you're still on YouTube, but I guess you really have to edit yourself. Yeah, because even talking about these things, even defending against farm murders, they call you all these horrible names, right? Isn't that outrageous? Like, I'm against the murder of these farmers. Oh, you white supremacist. It's amazing.
Yeah. No, you won't get banned from a place like Facebook if you mostly speak Afrikaans on there.
Oh, good, yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, the average boomer on Facebook says things that are way worse than anything that you ever said on your show about topics that we all know are completely not allowed to be talked about in any sense on social media, and they get away with it because they speak Afrikaans.
Yeah. Lived experience. Well, folks, Willem, he's not hard to find, neither are we, so you need to spread the word, share the interview, let others know. We are in an information war, but we have the information that will help us win. We just need to get it out there. So be the army, spread this discussion, all of them, and we'll see you on the next one.